This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Lock In, a novel. Written by John Scalzi, narrated by Will Wheaton.
Hayden Syndrome. Hayden Syndrome is the name given to a set of continuing physical and mental conditions and disabilities initially brought on by the Great Flu, the influenza-like global pandemic that resulted in the deaths of more than 400 million people worldwide, either through the initial flu-like symptoms, the secondary stage of meningitis-like cerebral and spinal inflammation, or through complications arising due to the third stage of the disease, which typically caused complete paralysis of the voluntary nervous system, resulting in lock-in for its victims. Hayden Syndrome is named for Margaret Hayden, the former First Lady of the United States of America, who became the syndrome's most visible victim. The physical origin of the Great Flu is unknown, but it was first diagnosed in London, England, with additional diagnoses occurring in New York, Toronto, Amsterdam, Tokyo, and Beijing almost immediately thereafter. A long incubation period before visible symptoms allowed for wide dispersal of the virus before its detection. As a result, more than 2.75 billion people worldwide were infected during the disease's initial wave. The disease's progression exhibited differently in each individual, depending on several factors, including personal health, age, genetic makeup, and relative environmental hygiene. The first flu-like stage was the most prevalent and serious, causing more than 75% of the overall deaths associated with Hayden's. However, a similar percentage of the affected presented only the first stage of the syndrome. A second stage of the syndrome, which affected the rest, superficially resembled viral meningitis and additionally caused deep and persistent changes in the brain structure of some of its victims. While affecting fewer people, the second stage of Hayden's featured a higher mortality rate per capita. Most who survived the second stage of Hayden's suffered no long-term physical or mental disabilities, but a significant number, more than 1% of those initially affected by the Great Flu, suffered from lock-in. An additional 0.25% experienced damage to their mental capabilities due to changes in their brain structure, but no degradation of physical ability. An even smaller number, not more than 100,000 people worldwide, experienced no physical or mental declines, despite significant changes in their brain structure. Some of those in this latter category would go on to become integrators. In the United States, 4.35 million of the nation's citizens and residents experienced lock-in due to the Great Flu, with other developed nations having a similar percentage of citizens locked in. This prompted the United States and its allies to fund the $3 trillion Hayden Research Initiative Act, a moonshot program designed to rapidly increase understanding of brain function and speed to market programs and prostheses that would allow those affected with Hayden's to participate in society. As a result of the HRIA, innovations such as the first embedded neural nets, personal transports, and the Hayden-only online space known as the Agora came into being within 24 months of the act being signed by President Benjamin Hayden. Although the HRIA led to significant new understanding of brain development and structure and prompted the development of several new industries catering to Hayden's affected individuals, over time, many people complained that Hayden's related research was over-prioritized and that the intense focus on Hayden sufferers, known as Haydens, had created a government-subsidized class that, despite their locked-in status, nevertheless had several competitive advantages over the population at large. This led to United States Senators David Abrams and Vonda Kettering sponsoring a bill to cut subsidies and programs for Haydens, tied to a significant tax cut. The Abrams-Kettering bill was initially defeated, but was presented again with changes and passed both houses of Congress by bare majorities. Despite significant research into the virus that causes Hayden's syndrome and the development of social hygiene programs to minimize its spread, there is still no reliable vaccine for the disease. Up to 20 million people are infected worldwide each year, and in the United States, between 15,000 and 45,000 people suffer from lock-in annually. While a vaccine eludes researchers, some progress has been made in after-infection treatment, including promising new therapies for rewiring the voluntary nervous system. These therapies are currently in animal trials. Hayden Syndrome article on highschoolcheatsheet.com. Chapter 1. My first day on the job coincided with the first day of the Hayden walkout, and I'm not going to lie, that was some awkward timing. A feed of me walking into the FBI building got a fair amount of play on the Hayden news sites and forums. This was not a thing I needed on my first day. Two things kept all of the agora from falling down on my head in outrage. The first was that not every Hayden was down with the walkout to begin with. The first day participation was spotty at best. The agora was split into two very noisy warring camps between the walkout supporters and the Haydens, who thought it was a pointless maneuver given that Abrams Kettering had already been signed into law. The second was that, technically speaking, the FBI is law enforcement, which qualified it as an essential service. So the number of Haydens calling me a scab was probably lower than it could have been. Aside from the agora outrage, my first day was a lot of time in HR, filling out paperwork, getting my benefits and retirement plan explained to me in mind-numbing detail. Then I was assigned my weapon, software upgrades, and badge. Then I went home early, because my new partner had to testify in a court case and wasn't going to be around for the rest of the day, and they didn't have anything else for me to do. I went home and didn't go into the agora. I watched movies instead. Call me a coward if you like. My second day on the job started with more blood than I would have expected. I spotted my new partner as I walked up to the Watergate Hotel. She was standing a bit away from the lobby entrance, sucking on an electronic cigarette. As I got closer, the chip in her badge started spilling her details into my field of vision. It was the Bureau's way of letting its agents know who was who on the scene. My partner didn't have her glasses on, so she wouldn't have had the same waterfall of detail on me scroll past her as I walked up. But then again, it was a pretty good chance she didn't need it. She spotted me just fine in any event. "Agent Shane," said my new partner to me. She held out her hand. "Agent Van," I said, taking the hand. And then I waited to see what the next thing out of her mouth would be. It's always an interesting test to see what people do when they meet me, both because of who I am and because I'm Hayden. One or the other usually gets commented on. Van didn't say anything else. She withdrew her hand and continued sucking on her stick of nicotine. Well, all right then. It was up to me to get the conversation started. So I glanced over to the car that we were standing next to. Its roof had been crushed by a love seat. "This ours?" I asked, nodding to the car and the love seat. "Tangentially," she said. "You recording?" "I can if you want me to," I said. "Some people prefer me not to." "I want you to," Van said. "You're on the job. You should be recording." "You got it," I said, and started recording. I started walking around the car, getting the thing from every angle. The safety glass in the car windows had shattered and a few nuggets had crumbled off. The car had diplomatic plates. I glanced over, and about 10 yards away, a man was on his phone, yelling at someone in what appeared to be Armenian. I was tempted to translate the yelling. Van watched me as I did it, still not saying anything. When I was done, I looked up and saw a hole in the side of the hotel, 7 floors up. "That where the love seat came from?" I asked. "That's probably a good guess," Van said. She took the cigarette out of her mouth and slid it into her suit jacket. "We going up there?" "I was waiting on you," Van said. "Sorry," I said, and looked up again. "Metro Police there already?" Van nodded. "Picked up the call from their network. Their alleged perp is an integrator, which puts it into our territory." "Have you told that to the police yet?" I asked. "I was waiting on you," Van repeated. "Sorry," I said again. Van motioned with her head toward the lobby. We went inside and took the elevator to the 7th floor, from which the love seat had been flung. Van pinned her FBI badge to her lapel. I slotted mine into my chest display. The elevator doors opened up and a uniformed cop was there. She held up her hand to stop us from getting off. We both pointed to our badges. She grimaced and let us pass, whispering into her handset as she did so. We aimed for the room that had cops all around the door. We got about halfway to it when a woman poked her head out of the room, looked around, spied us, and stomped over. I glanced over at Van, who had a smirk on her face. "Detective Trin," Van said as the woman came up. "No," Trin said. "No way. This has nothing to do with you, Les." It's nice to see you too, Van said. And wrong, your perp is an integrator. You know what that means. All suspected crimes involving personal transports or integrators are assumed to have an interstate component, I said, quoting the Bureau handbook. Trin looked over at me sourly, then made a show of ignoring me to speak to Van. I tucked away that bit of personal interaction for later. I don't know my perp's an integrator, she said to Van. I do, Van said. When your officer on scene called it in, he ID'd the perp. It's Nicholas Bell. Bell's an integrator. He's in our database. He pinged the moment your guy ran him. I turned my head to look at Van at the mention of the name, but she kept looking at Trin. Just because he's got the same name doesn't make him an integrator, Trin said. Come on, Trin, Van said. Are we really going to do this in front of the children? It took me a second to realize Van was talking about me and the uniformed cops. You know it's a pissing match you're going to lose. Let us in, let us do our job. If it turns out everyone involved was in D.C. at the time, we'll turn over everything we have and be out of your hair. Let's play nice and do this all friendly. Or I could not be friendly. You remember how that goes. Trin turned and stomped back to the hotel room without another word. I'm missing some context, I said. You got about all you need, Van said. She headed to the room, number 714. I followed. There was a dead body in the room, on the floor, face down in the carpet, throat cut. The carpet was soaked in blood. There were sprays of blood on the walls, on the bed, and on the remaining seat in the room. A breeze turned in the room, provided by the gaping hole in the wall-length window that the love seat had gone through. Van looked at the dead body. Do we know who he is? No ID, Trin said. We're working on it. Van looked around, trying to find something. Where's Nicholas Bell? She asked Trin. Trin smiled thinly. At the precinct, she said. The first officer on the scene subdued him, and we sent him off before you got here. Who is the officer? Van asked. Timmons, Trin said. He's not here. I need his arrest feed, Van said. I don't now, Trin, Van said. You know my public address. Give it to Timmons. Trin turned away, annoyed, but pulled out her phone and spoke into it. Van pointed to the uniformed officer in the room. Anything moved or touched? Not by us, he said. Van nodded. Shane. Yeah? I said. Make a map, Van said. Make it detailed. Mind the glass. On it, I said. My recording mode was already on. I overlaid a three-dimensional grid on top of it, marking off everything I could see and making it easier to identify where I needed to look behind and under things. I walked the room, carefully, filling in the nooks and crannies. I knelt down when I got to the bed, turning on my headlight to make sure I got all the details. And there were, in fact, details to note under the bed. There's a glass under here, I said to Van. It's broken and covered in blood. I stood up and pointed over to the room's desk, which featured a set of glasses and a couple of bottles of water. There are also glass shards on the floor by the desk, guessing that's our murder weapon. You done with your map? Van said. Almost, I said. I took a few more passes around the room to pick up the spots I'd missed. I assume you also made your own map? Van said to Trin. We got the tech on the way, Trin said, and we've got the feed from the officers on the scene. I want all of them, Van said. I'll send you Shane's map, too. Fine, Trin said, annoyed. Anything else? That's it for now, Van said. Then if you don't mind stepping away from my crime scene, I have work to do, Trin said. Van smiled at Trin and left the room. I followed. Metro Police always like that? I asked as we stepped into the elevator. No one likes the feds stepping into their turf, Van said. They're never happy to see us. Most of them are more polite. Trin has some issues. Issues with us or issues with you? I asked. Van smiled again. The elevator opened to the lobby. Do you mind if I smoke? Van asked. She was driving manually toward the precinct house and fumbling for a package of cigarettes, real ones this time. It was her car. There was no law against it there. I'm immune to secondhand smoke, if that's what you're asking, I said. Cute. She fished out a cigarette and punched in the car lighter to warm it up. I dialed down my sense of smell as she did so. Access my box on the FBI server and tell me if the arrest feed is there yet, she said. How am I going to do that, I asked. I gave you access yesterday, Van said. You did? You're my partner now. I appreciate that, I said. But what would you have done if you met me and decided I was an untrustworthy asshole? Van shrugged. My last partner was an untrustworthy asshole. I shared my box with her. What happened to her? I asked. She got shot, Van said. Line of duty? I asked. Not really, Van said. She was at the firing range and shot herself in the gut. There's some debate about whether it was accidental or not. Took disability and retired. I didn't mind. Well, I said, I promise not to shoot myself in the gut. Two body jokes in under a minute, Van said. It's almost like you're trying to make a point or something. Just making sure you're comfortable with me, I said. Not everyone knows what to do with a Hayden when they meet one. You're not my first, she said. The lighter had popped out and she fished it out of its socket, lighting her cigarette. That should be obvious considering our beat. Have you accessed the arrest feed yet? Hold on. I popped into the Bureau's evidence server and pulled up Van's box. The file was there, freshly arrived. It's here, I said. Run it, Van said. You want me to port it to the dash? I'm driving. Auto drive is a thing that happens. Van shook her head. This is a Bureau car, she said. Lowest bidder auto drive is not something you want to trust. Fair point, I said. I fired up the arrest feed. It was janky and low res. The Metro Police, like the Bureau, probably contracted their tech to the lowest bidder. The view was FPS stereo mode, which probably meant the camera was attached to protective eyewear. The recording started as the cop, Timmons, got off the elevator on the 7th floor, stun gun drawn. At the door of room 714, there was a Watergate security officer, resplendent in a bad-fit mustard-yellow uniform. As the feed got closer, the security officer's taser came into view. The security officer looked like he was going to crap himself. Timmons navigated around the security officer, and the image of a man sitting on the bed, hands up, floated into view. His face and shirt were streaked with blood. The image jerked, and Timmons took a long look at the dead man on the blood-soaked carpet. The view jerked back up to the man on the bed, hands still up. "Is he dead?" asked a voice, which I assumed was Timmons's. The man on the bed looked down at the man on the carpet. "Yeah, I think he is," he said. "Why the fuck did you kill him?" Timmons asked. The man on the bed turned back to Timmons. "I don't think I did," he said. "Look." Then Timmons zapped the man. He jerked and twisted and fell off the bed, collapsing to the carpet, mirroring the dead man. "Interesting," I said. "What?" Van asked. Timmons was barely in the room before he zapped our perp. "Bell," Van said. "Yeah," I said. "Speaking of which, does that name sound familiar to you?" "Did Bell say anything before he got zapped?" Van asked, ignoring my question. "Timmons asked him why he killed that guy," I said. "Bell said he didn't think he did." Van frowned at that. "What?" I asked. Van glanced over to me again and had a look that told me she wasn't looking at me, but at my PT. "That's a new model," she said. "Yeah," I said, "Sebring Warner 660XS. "Sebring Warner 600 line isn't cheap," Van said. "No," I admitted. "Lease payments are a little steep on a rookie FBI salary." "Is this how we're going to do this?" I asked. "I'm just making an observation," Van said. "Fine," I said. "I assume they told you something about me when they assigned me to you as a partner?" "They did." "And I assume you know about the Hayden community because it's your beat?" "Yes." "Then let's skip the part where you pretend not to know who I am and who my family is and how I can afford a Sebring Warner 660, I said. Van smiled and stubbed out her cigarette on the side window and lowered the window to check out the butt. "I saw you got grief on the Agora for showing up to work yesterday," she said. "Nothing I haven't gotten before for other things," I said. "Nothing I can't handle." "Is this going to be a problem?" "You being you?" "Yeah," I said. "Why would it be a problem?" Van asked. "When I went to the academy, I knew people there thought I was there as an affectation," I said. "That I was just farting around until my trust fund vested or something." "Has it?" Van asked. "Your trust fund, I mean, vested. Before I even went to the academy," I said. Van snickered at this. "No problems," she said. "You sure?" "Yes." "And anyway, it's good that you have a high-end threep," she said, using the slang term for a personal transport. "It means that map of yours is actually going to have a useful resolution, which works because I don't trust Trin to send me anything helpful. The arrest feed was messy and fuzzy, right?" Yeah, I said. It's bullshit, Van said. Metro Eyewear feeds auto-stabilize and record at 4K resolution. Trin probably told Timmons to shitty it up before sending it because she's an asshole like that. So you're using me for my superior tech abilities, I said. Yes, I am, Van said. Is that going to be a problem? No, I said. It's nice to be appreciated for what I can do. Good, Van said, turning into the precinct house parking lot, because I'm going to be asking you to do a lot. Chapter 2. Who's the clank? The man asked Van as he met us at the precinct. My facial scan software popped him up as George Davidson, captain of the Metro 2nd Precinct. Wow, really? I said before I could stop myself. I used the wrong word, didn't I? Davidson said, looking at me. I can never remember if clank or threep is the word I'm not supposed to be using today. Here's a hint, I said. One comes from a beloved android character from one of the most popular films of all time. The other describes the sound of broken machinery. Guess which one we like better. Got it, Davidson said. I thought you people were on strike today. Jesus, I said, annoyed. Touchy three, Davidson said to Van. Asshole cop, Van said to Davidson. Davidson smiled. This is Agent Chris Shane, my new partner. No shit, Davidson said, looking back at me. He clearly recognized the name. Surprise, I said. Van waved at Davidson to get his attention back over to her. You've got someone I want to talk to. Yes, I do, Davidson said. Trin told me you'd be coming. You're not going to be as difficult as she's been, I hope, Van said. Oh, you know I'm all about cooperation between law enforcement entities, Davidson said. And also you've never crossed me. Come on. He motioned us forward into the bowels of the station. A few minutes later, we were staring at Nicholas Bell through glass. He was in an interrogation room, silent, waiting. Doesn't look like the guy to shove someone out of a window, Davidson observed. It wasn't a guy, Van said. The guy was still in the room. It was a love seat. Doesn't look like the guy to shove a love seat out of a window either, Davidson said. Van pointed. That's an integrator, Van said. He spends a lot of time with other people in his head, and those people want to do a lot of different things. He's in better shape than you think. If you say so, Davidson said, you'd know better than I would. Have you talked to him yet? I asked. Detective Gonzalez took a pass at him, Davidson said. He sat there and didn't say a word, and did that for about 20 minutes. Well, he has a right to remain silent, I said. He hasn't invoked that right yet, Davidson said. He hasn't asked for a lawyer yet either. That wouldn't have anything to do with your Officer Timmons zapping him into unconsciousness at the scene now, would it? Van asked. I don't have the full report from Timmons yet, Davidson said. You're a beacon of safe constitutional practices, Davidson. Davidson shrugged. He's been awake for a while. If he remembers he's got rights, then fine. Until then, if you want to take a pass at him, he's all yours. I looked over to Van to see what she was going to do. I think I'm going to pee, she said. Well, then I'm going to get a coffee. Down the hall for both, Davidson said. You remember where. Van nodded and left. Chris Shane, huh? Davidson said to me after she was gone. That's me, I said. I remember when you were a kid, Davidson said. Well, not a kid exactly. You know what I mean. I do, I said. How's your dad? Is he going to run for senator or what? He hasn't decided yet, I said. That's off the record. I used to watch him play, Davidson said. I'll let him know, I said. Been with her long? Davidson motioned after Van. First day as her partner, second day on the job. You're a rookie, Davidson asked. I nodded. It's hard to tell because, he motioned to my threep. I get that, I said. It's a nice threep, he said. Thanks. Sorry about the clank thing. It's not a problem, I said. I guess you'd have less than flattering ways of describing us, Davidson said. Dodgers, I said. What? Dodgers, I repeated. It's short for Dodger dogs. It's the hot dog they serve at Dodger Stadium in L.A. I know what a Dodger dog is, Davidson said. I don't think I get how you get from us to them. Two ways, I said. One, you guys are basically meat stuffed into skin. So are hot dogs. Two, hot dogs are mostly lips and assholes, and so are you guys. Nice, Davidson said. You asked, I said. Yeah, but why Dodger dogs? Davidson said. This is a lifelong Nationals fan asking. Got me, I said. Why Threep? Why Clank? Slang happens. Any slang for him? Davidson pointed to Bell, who was still sitting there quietly. He's a mule, I said. Makes sense, Davidson said. Yeah. Ever use one? An integrator? Once, I said. I was 12 and my parents took me to Disney World. Thought it would be better to experience it in the flesh, so they scheduled me an integrator for the day. How was it? I hated it, I said. It was hot. After an hour, my feet hurt, and I nearly pissed myself because I had no idea how to do it like you guys do, right? That's all taken care of for me, and I got Hayden so young that I don't remember doing it the other way. The integrator had to surface to do it, and they're not supposed to do that when they're carrying someone. After a couple of hours, I complained enough that we went back to the hotel and swapped back out with the Threep, and then I had a good time. They still had to pay the integrator for the full day, though. And you haven't done it since? No, I said. Why bother? Huh, Davidson said. The door to the interrogation room opened, and Van came through it carrying two cups of coffee. He pointed to her. She's one, you know. She's one what? An integrator, Davidson said. Or was, anyway, before she joined the Bureau. I didn't know that, I said. I looked over to where she was sitting down and getting comfortable. It's why she's got this beat, Davidson said. She gets you guys in a way the rest of us don't. No offense, but it's hard for the rest of us to wrap our brains around what's going on with you. I understand that, I said. Yeah, Davidson said. He was quiet for a second, and I waited for what I knew was coming next, the personal connection to Hayden's. I guessed an uncle or a cousin. I had a cousin who got Hayden's, Davidson said, and internally I checked off the victory. This was back with the first wave, when they had no idea what the fuck was going on, before they called it Hayden's. She got the flu and then seemed to get better, and then... He shrugged. Lock-in, I said. Right, Davidson said. I remember going to the hospital to see her, and they had the whole wing of locked-in patients, just lying there, doing nothing but breathing, dozens of them. And a couple of days before, all of them were walking around, living a normal life. What happened to your cousin? I asked. She lost it, Davidson said. Being locked in made her have a psychotic break or something like that. I nodded. That wasn't uncommon, unfortunately. Right, Davidson said. She hung in for a couple of years, and then her body gave it up. Sorry, I said. It was bad, Davidson said. But it was bad for everyone. I mean, shit, the first lady got it. That's why it's called Hayden's. It still sucks. It does, Davidson agreed and pointed to Van. I mean, she got Hayden's too, right? Davidson asked. At some point. That's why she's like she is. Sort of, I said. There was a tiny percentage of people who were infected who had their brain structure altered but didn't get locked in. A tiny percentage of them had their brains altered enough to be able to be integrators. It was more complicated than that, but I didn't think Davidson actually cared that much. There's maybe 10,000 integrators on the entire planet. Huh, Davidson said. Anyway, she's an integrator, or was. So maybe she'll get something out of this guy after all. He turned up the volume on the speakers so we could hear what she was saying to Bell. I brought you some coffee, Van said to Bell, sliding the coffee over to him. Knowing nothing about you, I guessed you might want cream and sugar. Sorry if I got that wrong. Bell looked at the coffee, but otherwise did and said nothing. Bacon cheeseburgers, Van said. What? Bell said. Van's apparent non sequitur had roused him out of complete silence. Bacon cheeseburgers, Van repeated. When I worked as an integrator, I ate so many goddamned bacon cheeseburgers. You might know why. Because the first thing anyone who's been locked in wants when they integrate is a bacon cheeseburger, Bell said. Van smiled. So it's not just me it happened to, she said. It's not, Bell said. There was a Five Guys down the street from my apartment, Van said. It got so that all I had to do was walk through the door, and they'd put the patties on the grill. They wouldn't even take my order, they knew. That sounds about right, Bell said. It took 2.5 years after I stopped integrating before I could even look at a bacon cheeseburger again, Van said. That sounds about right, too, Bell said. I wouldn't eat them anymore if I didn't have to. Be strong, Van said. Bell grabbed the coffee Van brought for him, smelled it, and took a sip. "You're not Metro," he said. "I've never met a Metro cop who'd been an integrator." "My name is Agent Leslie Van," she said. "I'm with the Bureau. I and my partner investigate crimes that involve Haydens. You're not typically what we consider a Hayden, but you are an integrator, which means a Hayden might have been involved here. If there was, then you and I both know this is something you may not be responsible for. But you have to let me know so I can help you." "Right," Bell said. "The police tell me that you've not previously been forthcoming on the whole talking thing." "I'll give you 3 guesses why," Bell said. "Probably because they zapped you as soon as they saw you." "Bingo." "Not that it means anything, but I apologize to you for that, Nicholas. It's not the way I would have handled it if I were there." "I was sitting on the bed," Bell said, "with my hands up. I wasn't doing anything." "I know," Van said. "And like I said, I apologize for that. It wasn't right." "On the other hand, and this isn't an excuse, just an observation, while you were sitting on the bed with your hands up, not doing anything, there was a dead guy on the floor, and his blood was all over you." She moved a single index finger to point. "Still all over you, come to think of it." Bell stared at Van, quiet. "Like I said, not an excuse," Van reiterated after 15 seconds of silence. "Am I under arrest?" Bell asked. "Nicholas, you were found in a room with a dead guy covered in his blood," Van said. "You can understand why we might all be curious about the circumstances. Anything you can tell us is going to be helpful. And if it clears your name, so much the better, right?" "Am I under arrest?" Bell repeated. "What you are is in a position to help me out," Van said. "I'm coming into this late. I've seen the hotel room, but I got there after you were taken away. So if you can clue me into what was happening in that room, what I should be looking for, anything would help. And if you help me, I'm in a better position to help you." Bell gave a wry smile to this, crossed his arms and looked away. "We're back to the not talking," Van said. "We can talk about bacon cheeseburgers again if you like." "You can at the very least tell me if you are integrated," Van said. "You're kidding," Bell said. "I'm not asking for details, just whether or not you were working," Van said. "Or were you about to work?" "I knew integrators who did freelancing on the side. A dodger wants to do something he can't be seen doing in public. They've got those gray market scanner caps that work well enough for the job. And now that Abrams Kettering's passed, you've got a reason to go looking for side gigs. The government contracts are drying up, and you've got family to think about." Bell, who had been sipping his coffee, set it down and swallowed. "You're talking about Cassandra now," he said. "No one would blame you," Van said. "Congress is taking away funding for Haydens after the immediate infection and transitional care. Said that the technology for helping them participate in the world has gotten so good that it shouldn't be considered a disability anymore." "Do you believe that?" Bell asked. "My partner is a Hayden," Van said. "If you ask me, it means now I have an advantage because threeps are better than the human body in lots of ways. But there are a lot of Haydens who slip through the cracks. Your sister, for example. She's not doing what Congress expects her to do, which is to get a job." Bell visibly bristled at this. "If you know who I am, then you certainly know who she is," he said. "I'd say she has a job, unless you think being one of the prime movers behind the Hayden walkout this week and the march they have planned for this weekend is something she's doing in her spare time." "I don't disagree with you, Nicholas," Van said. "She's not exactly working at Subway, making sandwiches, but she's also not making any money doing what she's doing." "Money isn't that important to her." "No, but it's about to become important," Van said. "Abrams Kettering means that Haydens are being transitioned out to private care. Someone has to cover her expenses now. You're her only living family. I guess it falls to you." "Which brings us back to that hotel room and that man you were with. And brings me back to my point, which is that if you were integrated, or were about to be integrated, then that's something I need to know. It's something I need in order to help you." "I appreciate your desire to help, Agent Van," Bell said dryly. "But I think what I really want to do is wait until my lawyer arrives and let him handle things from here." Van blinked. "I wasn't told you'd asked for a lawyer," she said. "I didn't," Bell said. "I called him while I was still in the hotel room, before the police zapped me. Bell tapped his temple, indicating all the high-tech apparatus he had stuffed into his skull. Which I recorded, of course, just like I record almost everything. Because you and I agree on one thing, Agent Van. Being in a room with a dead body complicates matters. Being electrocuted before I could exercise my rights complicates them even more. At this, Bell smiled and looked up as if paying attention to something unseen. And that's a ping from my lawyer. He's here. I expect your life is about to get much more interesting, Agent Van. I think we're done here then, Van said. I think we are, Bell said. But it was lovely talking food with you. Chapter 3. So, to recap, Samuel Schwartz said, and held up a hand to tick off points. Illegally stunning my client when he was not offering any resistance, detaining him without cause in a holding cell, and then two separate law enforcement agencies, one local, one federal, question him without making him aware of his rights and without his lawyer present. Have I missed anything, Captain? Agent Van? Captain Davidson shifted uncomfortably in his desk chair. Van, standing behind him, said nothing. She was looking at Schwartz, or, more accurately, at his threep, standing in front of the captain's desk. The threep was a Sebring Warner like mine, but it was the Ajax 370, which I found mildly surprising. The Ajax 370 wasn't cheap, but it also wasn't the top of the line, either for Sebring Warner or for the Ajax model. Lawyers usually went for the high-end imports. Either Schwartz was clueless about status symbols, or he didn't need to advertise his status. I decided to run her through the database to see which was the case. Your client never expressed his right to remain silent or his desire for a lawyer, Davidson said. Yes, it's strange how getting hit with 50,000 volts will keep a person from verbalizing either of those, isn't it? Schwartz said. He didn't ask for them after he got here, either, Van noted. Schwartz turned his head to her. The Ajax 370 model's stylized head bore some resemblance to the Oscar statuette, with subtle alterations to where the eyes, ears, and mouth would be, both to avoid trademark issues and to give humans conversing with the Threep something to focus on. Heads could be heavily customized, and a lot of younger Haydens did that. But for adults with serious jobs, that was déclassé, which was another clue to Schwartz's likely social standing. He didn't have to, Agent Van, Schwartz said, because he called me before the cops stunned him into silence. The fact he called a lawyer is a clear indication that he knew his rights and intended to exercise them in this case. He turned his attention to Davidson. The fact your officers deprived him of his ability to affirm his right does not mean he refused his right, even if he did not reiterate that fact here. We could argue that point. Davidson said. Yes, let's, Schwartz said. Let's go to the judge right now and do that. But if you're not going to do that, then you need to let my client go home. You're joking, Van said. You can't see me smile at that comment, Agent Van, Schwartz said, but I promise you, the smile is there. Your client was in a room with a dead body. The guy's blood all over him, Van said. That's not the mark of complete innocence. But it's not the mark of guilt, either, Schwartz said. Agent Van, you have a man who has no previous police record, at all, not even for jaywalking. His line of business requires him to surrender control of his body to others. As a consequence of that, from time to time, he meets clients he does not personally know, who conduct business with others who he also does not personally know, such as the dead gentleman at the Watergate. You're saying your client was integrated at the time of the murder, I said. Schwartz turned and looked at me for what I suspected was the first time in the entire conversation. As with Schwartz's threep, mine had a fixed head, which showed no expression. But I had no doubt he was sizing up my make and model just as I had sized up his, looking for clues as to who I was and how important I was to the conversation. That, and taking in my badge, still in my chest display slot. I am saying that my client was in that hotel room on business, Agent Shane, he said after a moment. Then tell us who he was integrated with, Van said. We can take it from there. You know I can't do that, Schwartz said. Van tracks down creeps with threeps all the time, Davidson said, motioning to Van. That's nearly your whole job, as far as I understand it. There's no law against tracking a person back from information on that threep. Out of reflex, I moved to correct Davidson's bad comparison, then caught Van's glance at me. I stopped. Schwartz was silent for a moment. Then Davidson's tablet pinged. He picked it up. "I just sent you 10 years of case law about the status of integrators, Captain," Schwartz said. "I did it because integrators are relatively rare, and therefore, unlike Agents Van and Shane here, who are currently being wholly disingenuous, you might be speaking out of genuine ignorance, and not just your usual levels of casual obstructionism." "All right," Davidson said, not looking at his tablet. "And?" "Superficially, integrators perform the same role as personal transports," Schwartz said. "They allow those of us who have been locked in by Hayden syndrome to be mobile, to work, and to participate in society. But this," Schwartz tapped his Threep's chest with his knuckles, "is a machine. Without its human operator, it's a pile of parts. It has no more rights than a toaster. It's property. Integrators are humans. Despite the superficial resemblance to what Threeps do, what integrators do is a skill and profession, one that they train hard for, as Agent Van can no doubt tell you." He turned to Van at this point. "Speaking of which, now you can tell Captain Davidson where I'm going with this." "He's going to argue there's integrator-client privilege," Van said to Davidson. "Like attorney-client privilege, or doctor-patient privilege, or confessor-parishioner privilege," Schwartz said, and pointed at Davidson's tablet. "And I'm not going to argue it, since the courts have already done so, and have affirmed, consistently, that integrator-client confidentiality is real and protected." "No Supreme Court cases," Van said. "And that should tell you something," Schwartz said. "Namely, that the idea of integrator-client privilege is so non-controversial that no one's bothered to appeal it all the way up. That said, please note Wintour v. Graham affirmed by the D.C. Court of Appeals. It applies directly here." "So you're going to argue your client didn't murder anyone. It was his client who did it," Davidson said. "And that you can't tell us who that client is." "He can't tell you who the client is, no," Schwartz said. "And we aren't saying it was murder. We don't know. Since neither Metro nor the Bureau has bothered to charge my client with murder yet, I'm guessing neither do you. At least not yet." "But you do know," Van said. "Bell said he's been recording everything. He'd have a record of the murder." "First, if you try to use anything my client said to you in that illegal interrogation of him in any way, I'm going to make life very difficult for you," Schwartz said. "Second, even if there is a record of what happened in that room, it's covered by privilege. My client's not going to turn it over. You can try to get a warrant for it if you like. All we will attest to is that my client was working from the moment he stepped into that room until the moment your goons assaulted him," Schwartz pointed at Davidson for emphasis, "and dragged him out of there. He's not responsible, and you have nothing. So, either arrest him and let me go to work dismantling your case and setting up a very profitable suit for police harassment, or get him out of that interrogation room right now and let him go home. These are your options, Captain Davidson, Agent Van." "How does he get to have you as a lawyer?" I asked. "Excuse me?" Schwartz asked, turning back to me. "You're general counsel at Accelerant Investments, Mr. Schwartz," I said, reading from the data I had pulled up. "That's a Fortune 100 company. It has to keep you busy. I don't suspect you have a private practice on the side, or that Mr. Bell could afford you if you did. So I'm wondering what Mr. Bell has done to deserve having someone of your caliber show up here to spring him." Another second of silence from Schwartz, and Davidson's tablet pinged again. He opened the ping, looked at it, and then turned it around to show me and Van. The tablet was open to a colorful sight full of baby goats and merry-go-rounds. "It's called a day in the park," Schwartz said. "Not everyone who's locked in is a lawyer or a professional, as I am sure you are amply aware. Some of those who are locked in are developmentally challenged. For them, operating a PT is difficult or next to impossible. They spend their days under very controlled stimulus. So I run a program that lets them out for a day in the park. They go to the petting zoo, ride rides, eat cotton candy, and otherwise get to enjoy their lives for a couple of hours. You should know about it, Agent Shane. Your father has been one of its co-sponsors for the last 7 years." "My father doesn't outline all his charitable work with me, Mr. Schwartz," I said. "Indeed," Schwartz said. "In any event, Mr. Bell donates his time for this program. He does more for it than any other local integrator here in D.C. In return, I told him if he ever needed a lawyer, he should call me. And here we are. That's a sweet story, Davidson said, putting down the tablet. I suppose it is, Schwartz said. Especially because now I'm going to give my client a happy ending to this particular problem, which will either be his freedom or a retirement-level settlement from both the Metro Police Department and the FBI. Your call, Captain, Agent Van. Tell me what it will be. Your thoughts, Van said at lunch. About this case? I asked. We were sitting in a hole-in-the-wall Mexican place not too far from the second precinct. Van was plowing through a plate of carnitas. I was not, but a quick status check at home told me that my body had gotten its noontime supply of nutritional liquid, so I had that going for me. Obviously about the case, Van said. It's your first case. I want to see what you're picking up and what you're missing, or what I'm missing. The first thing is that the case should now be all ours, I said. Schwartz admitted Bell was working as an integrator. Standard procedure with Hayden's means that the case needs to be transferred to us. Yes, Van said. Do you think there's going to be a problem with this? I asked. Not with Davidson, Van said. I've done him some favors, and he and I don't have any problems with each other. Trin will be pissy about it, but I don't really care about that, and neither should you. If you say so. I do say so, Van said. What else? Since the case is ours now, we should have the body sent to the Bureau for our people to look at, I said. Transfer order already processed, Van said. He's on the way now. We should also get all the data from Metro. High resolution this time, I said, remembering Trin's last bit of feed. Right, Van said. What else? Have Bell followed? I put in a request. I wouldn't count on it. We won't put a tail on a potential murder suspect? You might have noticed we have a protest march coming into town this weekend, Van said. That's Metro's problem, I said. Dealing with the logistics of the march, yes, Van said. Keeping tabs on the protest leaders and other high-value individuals, on the other hand, is all us. What about Schwartz? He's a schmuck, I ventured. Not where I was going, Van said. Do you believe his story about how he happened to be Bell's lawyer? Maybe, I said. Schwartz is really rich. I checked when I pulled his data earlier. Through Accelerant, he's worth at least $200 or $300 million. Really rich folks do a lot of reputational transactions. I have no idea what you just said. Van stuck another piece of carnitas into her mouth. Rich people show their appreciation through favors, I said. When everyone you know has more money than they know what to do with, money stops being a useful transactional tool. So instead, you offer favors, deals, quid pro quos, things that involve personal involvement rather than money. Because when you're that rich, your personal time is your limiting factor. Speaking from experience? Van asked. Speaking from very close observation, yes, I said. That seemed a good enough answer for Van. So you think this could be a case of noblesse oblige on the part of Schwartz toward a hired hand? I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me, I said, unless you think there's something else there. I do think there's something else there, Van said, or someone else. Lucas Hubbard. I sat there thinking about the name Van said. Then it smacked me like a fish across the head. Oh, man, I said. Yeah, Van said. Chairman and CEO of Accelerant, the single richest Hayden on the planet, who lives in Falls Church, and who almost certainly uses an integrator for board meetings and in-person negotiations. You need a face for face-to-face meetings, the one that moves. No offense. None taken, I said. Do we know if Nicholas Bell is the integrator he uses? We can find out, Van said. There aren't that many integrators in the D.C. area, and half of them are women, which rules them out, given what I know about Hubbard. I know people who have integrators tied up on long-term service contracts, I said. Locks up their use except for NIH-required public service. If Bell's on a contract, we could find that out, and for whom? Yeah, Van said. I hate that shit. Abrams Kettering, I said. You said it to Bell, Van. They passed that law, and suddenly a lot of folks have to think about where their paychecks are coming from. Everyone around Hayden's has to change the way they do business. Rich Hayden's can pay for integrators. Integrators have to eat. Van looked grumpily into her plate of food. This shouldn't be a surprise to you, I said. I wanted to segue into asking her about her time as an integrator, but got a ping before I could. Excuse me a minute, I said to Van, who nodded. I opened up a window in my head and saw Miranda, my daytime nurse. She was in the foreground. In the background was me, in my room. "Hi, Miranda," I said. "What's up?" "Three things," she said. "One, that bed sore on your hip is back. Have you felt it yet?" "I've been busy working my threep today, so I'm sensory forward here," I said. "I haven't really noticed anything going on with my body." "All right," Miranda said. "I've numbed it in any event. We're going to have to change your body movement schedule a bit to work around the sore, so don't be surprised if you come home today and you're face down on the bed." "Got it," I said. "Two, remember that at 4, Dr. All is here to work on your molar. You're going to want to dial your body sensitivity way down for that. She tells me it's likely to get messy." "It doesn't seem fair I get cavities when I don't even use my teeth," I joked. "Three, your mother came in to tell me to remind you that she expects you home in time for the get-together at 7. She wanted me to remind you that it is in your honor to celebrate your new job, so don't embarrass her by being late." "I won't," I said. "And I want to remind you to tell your mother that it's not my job to forward messages to you," Miranda said, "especially when your mother is perfectly capable of pinging you herself." "I know," I said. "Sorry. I like your mom, but if she keeps up this Edwardian shit, I may have to chloroform her." "That's fair," I said. "I'll talk to her about it, Miranda, I promise." "All right," Miranda said. "Let me know if the bed sore starts to bother you. I'm not happy it came back." "I will. Thank you, Miranda," I said. She disconnected, and I reconnected with Van. "Sorry about that. Everything all right?" she asked. "I have a bed sore," I said. "You gonna be all right?" "I'll be fine," I said. "My nurse is rotating me." "There's an image," Van said. "Welcome to the Hayden life," I said. "Not to assume too much, but I'm surprised you don't have one of those cradles designed to keep down bed sores and exercise your muscles and such." "I do," I said. "I just ulcerate easily. It's a condition, entirely unrelated to the Haydens. I would have it even if I weren't, you know," I motioned with my arm to display my threep. "This." "Sucks," Van said. "We all have problems," I said. "Let's get back to Bell," Van said. "Anything else we should be thinking about?" "Do we need to consider his sister?" I asked. "Why would we need to do that?" Van asked. "I don't know," I said. "Maybe because Cassandra Bell is the best-known Hayden separatist in the country and currently spearheading a general strike in that protest march you were reminding me about?" "I know who she is," Van said. "What I'm asking is why you think it's relevant." "I don't know that it is," I said. "On the other hand, when the previously under-the-radar integrator brother of a famous Hayden radical is intimately involved in what looks to be a murder using his body as the weapon, I think we might have to consider all the angles." "Hmm," Van said. She turned back to her plate. "So," I said after a minute, "did I pass the audition?" "You're a little edgy," Van said to me. "I'm nervous," I said. "It's my second day on the job, the first one with you. You're the senior partner. I want to know how I'm working out for you." "I'm not going to give you participation ribbons every couple of hours, Shane," Van said, "and I'm not that mysterious. If you piss me off or annoy me, I'm going to let you know." "Okay," I said. "So stop worrying about how you're doing and just do the job," Van said. "Tell me what you think, and tell me what you think about what I'm thinking. You don't have to wait for me to ask. All you have to do is pay attention." "Like when you looked over to me today in Davidson's office," I said. "When you were going to contradict Davidson about threeps and integrators being more or less the same thing," Van said. "Yes, that's an example. I'm glad you caught it. You don't need to be helping Schwartz." "He was right, though." "Schwartz, I mean." Van shrugged at this. "Are you saying I should just shut up every time someone says something stupid or factually wrong about Haydens?" I asked. "I just want to be clear what you're asking." "I'm saying pay attention to when it makes sense to say something," Van said, "and pay attention to when it makes sense to hold it in for the moment. I get that you're used to saying what you think to anyone anytime. That comes from being an entitled rich kid." "Come on," I said. Van held up a hand, not a criticism, an observation. "But that's not the job, Shane. The job is to watch and learn and solve." She popped the final piece of carnitas into her mouth, then reached into her suit jacket for her electronic cigarette. "I'll try," I said. "I'm not always good at shutting up." "That's why you have a partner," Van said, "so you can vent at me afterward. Now come on, let's get back to work." "Where to now?" "I want to get a better look at that hotel room," Van said, and sucked on her cigarette. "Trin hustled us through it pretty quickly. I'm ready for a slow dance." Chapter 4. "This doesn't look like the Watergate," I said, as we entered the third sub-basement of the FBI building. "We're not going to the Watergate," Van said, heading down a corridor. I followed. "I thought you wanted to take another look at the room," I said. "I do," Van said, "but there's no point going back there now. Metro Police have been all over it. Trin and her people have inevitably messed it up looking at things. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trin released it to the hotel for cleanup." She stopped at a door. "So we're here to look at the room instead." I read the placard next to the door. "Imaging suite," I said. "Come on," Van said, and opened the door. Inside was a room roughly 6 meters to a side. White walls, bare except for projectors in each corner, and a space where a technician stood behind a bank of monitors. He looked over at us and smiled. "Agent Van," he said, "you're back." "I'm back," Van agreed, and motioned to me. "Agent Shane, my new partner." The technician waved. "Ramon Diaz," he said. "Hi," I said. "Are we ready?" Van asked. "Just finishing diagnostics on the projectors," Diaz said. "One of them's been wonky for the past couple of days, but I have all the data that came over from Metro." Van nodded and looked at me. "Did you upload your scan of the room to the server?" "I did that before we left the room," I said. Van turned to Diaz. "We're going to use Shane's scan as the base," she said. "Got it," Diaz said. "Let me know when you're ready." "Fire it up," Van said. The hotel room popped into being. The scan wasn't a live video feed of the room, but instead a mass of still photos knitted together to create a static, information-dense recreation of the room. I took a look at it and smiled. The whole room was there. I had done a good job of panning and scanning. "Shane," Van pointed at a curving object on the carpet, not too far from the corpse. "Headset," I said. "Over-the-head scanner and transmitter for neural information. It suggests that this guy, whoever he is, was a tourist." I figured Van knew this, but was checking to see if I did. "Looking to borrow Bell's body," Van said. "Yeah," I said. I knelt and got a better look at the headset. Like all these sorts of headsets, it was a one-of-a-kind affair. Technically speaking, the only people cleared to use integrators were Haydens. But wherever there's a less-than-legal demand, there's a black market. The headset was jammed together medical equipment, designed for early-stage Haydens diagnosis and communication. It was a kludge, but a clever one. It wouldn't give a tourist anything close to the actual full integrator experience. You needed a network implanted inside of your head for that sort of thing. But it would offer something like high-definition 3D with additional faint but real sensory perception. It was more real than the movies, anyway. "This one looks pretty high-end," I said to Van. "The scanner's a Phaeton, and the transmitter looks like General Dynamics." "Serial numbers?" "I don't see any," I said. "Do we have the real thing in evidence?" Van glanced over at Diaz, who looked up and nodded. "I can take a closer look at it if you want," Diaz said. "If you don't find anything on the exterior, see if you can scan the inside of it," I said. "The processing chips probably have serial numbers on them. We can see when the batches were sent off, and from there piece together who's supposed to be owning the scanner and transmitter." "Worth a shot," Van said. I stood up and looked over to the corpse, face down in the carpet. "What about him?" I asked. Van looked back to Diaz. "Nothing yet," he said. "How does that happen?" I asked Diaz. "You have to get fingerprinted to get a driver's license." "Our examiners only just got him," Diaz said. "Metro took fingerprints and did a face scan, but sometimes they take their time sharing information, if you know what I mean. So we're doing our own and running those through our databases now. We'll be doing DNA, too. We'll probably find him by the time you're done here." "Let me see the face scan," Van said. "You want just the face or the wide-angle shot when they turned him over?" "Wide-angle shot," Van said. The man on the floor instantly flipped. He was olive-skinned and looked mid to late 30s. From this angle, the severity of the cut throat was a whole lot more dramatic. The wound slashed from the left side of the neck near the jawline and continued downward, terminating on the right side of the hollow of the throat. "What do you think?" Van asked me. "I think we've got an explanation for the arterial spurts," I said. "That's a hell of a cut." Van nodded but was silent. "What is it?" I asked. "I'm thinking," Van said. "Give me a minute." While she was thinking, I looked at the corpse's face. Is he Hispanic? I asked. Van ignored me, still thinking. I looked over to Diaz, who pulled